ceremony. Oh, before I forget, there is a sign-up sheet every New Year's. We do a New Year's sitting out at my house, so everybody's welcome if you'd like to come. Not most people's idea of what to do with New Year's, but so we start at 8 o'clock. We make it kind of accessible, and we just start with a half an hour sitting, and then we do a 10-minute walking, half an hour sitting, 10-minute walking, and we ring 108 bells, and then we finish it. We do it at 10 o'clock. 10 o'clock is midnight, because we're getting older, and I don't want to send people on the road at 1 o'clock, right, 12 o'clock. So we finish at 10, we do a little ceremony, light a fire, and have some refreshments, and then people can leave early if they like. And you can come just for an hour if you want. So there's a sign-up sheet, and put it on, and I'll send you directions on how to get to my house. So we were doing the closing of the practice period, and people were asking questions, and that's really helpful for me when people ask questions, because then I know what you're interested in and what you're working with. And Tina asked me a question about time being, and my quick, short answer to her was, in the Buddhist context, time is very important to think about time. And that the idea is to think about it in a way to expand your awareness of it. So I was inspired to take on Dogen's spasicle on time being, Ujjayi. Those of you that don't know, who Dogen was the 13th century monk who he was from a royal family and lost his mother when he was very young, Noah's father, and ordained when he was 16 in the Tendai tradition, and then he went to China and studied with various teachers. One teacher, Ru Jing, he studied with, and took Ru Jing's form of meditation back to Japan, and that became one of the two major schools of Zen. There's Rinzai, which comes from Lin Shi, one of the teachers in China, and this is our particular emphasis is Soto Zen. And he wrote, he really is considered one of the great spiritual geniuses of, certainly in the Zen tradition, the Buddhist tradition. And to be honest, and I hope I don't intimidate you with this, because I intimidate myself, probably the most difficult fascicle. Fascicle means a sermon that he wrote is called Ujjayi, which is time being. So very difficult to understand, and I hope I don't. Hope I do it a little bit of justice. It's about 7 pages, and so I'll do what I can with it. As anybody I mentioned this to people before, has anybody here read the book For Time Being by Ruth Ohsaki? It was shortlisted on, this year, shortlisted on the Booker Prize. You know, the Booker is in the Commonwealth, you know, Canada, Australia. They sort of picked the best writers, and she was shortlisted for this book. And this book, For the Time Being, because she's a Zen practitioner, is based on this fascicle, Ujjayi, by Dogen, Time Being. And it's quite a wonderful and entertaining book. It's about her, a little bit of autobiographical, although, you know, she plays with it. She lives in Orcas Island, up in the upper San Juans in Canada, and she's walking on the beach, or her character is walking on the beach, and it covers a bottle, and in the bottle is a note, and the note has drifted over from Japan, and it tells a story about this young girl who actually was raised mostly in America. Her father's Japanese, she's Japanese, and he lost his job because he wouldn't work for a defense contractor with his knowledge, and so he goes back to Japan, and then he becomes suicidal, and she has all kinds of difficulty reintegrating into Japanese society. But actually, it's a quite wonderful enough book, and she's got this aunt who's a Japanese nun, and so she visits this monastery. And basically, The tying being part is just, it's the woman who gets the bottle doesn't know if this girl is still alive or not. And so the two lives start to intertwine. And so she's playing with this idea that Dogen presents to us about the mysterious quality of time. If we really start to explore the quality of time, usually we think of time as something like a commodity. You know, like I have time, or I don't have enough time, or you know, even the title Uji, time being, is kind of, you know, I've been playing with that title. When I say that to you, when you say that, well, for the time being, what does that mean to you? You know, for the time being, it means to me, it means like something like maybe right now for the time being, but also implies something that's very important in Buddhism, which is impermanence. Just, well, it's now, but just for now, but maybe not always for now, right? So what Dogen is trying to get us to do is see time in a much bigger perspective. One of my teachers, early teachers, was Katagiri Roshi, Suzuki Roshi, who started San Francisco Zen Center, brought over a couple of priests to help him, and Katagiri was one of those priests. And this is a collection of his Dharma talks that he gave over the years on time, primarily on time. And I want to read you a little bit on this section 3 of this book. So if you're interested in this topic, this is quite a good book to read. So he says, and he's talking about this fastful time being, it is very important to see your life not only from the narrow view of your egotistic telescope, but also from the broad view of the universal telescope. So you could say that all of, I mean really, my sense is all of the sutras and all of religious writing is trying to do this. It's just trying to broaden your perspective from your narrow self-centered point of view to something more expansive that creates more of an opportunity for love, really. Because that's another word for connection. But also from the broad view of universal telescope called egolessness. This is why we have to practice. This is why we do our meditation. Right in the middle of the stream of time, we have to open our eyes there to see the total picture of time. Through spiritual practice, we can go beyond our egotistic point of view. We can touch the core of time, see the whole world in a moment, and understand time in deep relationship with all beings. Then we cannot be isolated and cold people. We become beautiful and warm people, appreciating and helping all beings. That is why Dogen always emphasized seeing time in a deeper way. Dogen Zenji's view of time is very difficult to understand. No one else has expressed the meaning of time exactly the way Dogen did. So, when you read time being, which we're going to start in a minute. So when you read time being, probably you don't understand it. So this is very helpful. He's normalizing here your initial response. I found it incredibly comforting because I've been trying to, you know, I've read this passage many times over the years. Every time I read it, I just, you know, it's like, what is he saying? Probably you don't understand it. But even though it is difficult, try to get a taste of it. So that's the spirit with Dogen. He will shift your perspective, but he's not going to take you down any road that you are used to traveling. You know, it's like maybe a really good poem that just doesn't come to you. It makes you, you know, really wonder and kind of penetrate it and chew on it a little bit. But even though it's difficult, try to get a taste of it. Try to understand. Because through the words, Dogen is expressing his deep experience of time. He is compassionately showing us how to make time alive in our lives. Dogen really wants us to understand how time influences human life, so that we know how to live in the best way possible. When you understand how the various aspects of human life unfold in this moment, you can live freely in the realm of time. You can face the moment and know what to do. Then, through conscious action, you can create your life, and your life really works. So, I was thinking this was also kind of appropriate. It didn't occur to me, but it's also appropriate because it's the solstice, right? Mm-hmm. It's the turning of time, and that's what happens in this particular, in the solstice. It reminds you of the cycles of life. It reminds you that this moment contains winter, but it also contains spring. So those of you that are in Larry, sorry Larry isn't here today, I'd have him read this, but you know, he sends out these beautiful poems. So this is Solstice Song. And so this poem is trying to do the same thing. It's trying to get us to see and appreciate the turnings, that we're involved in something. Both this moment contains the past and the future. It opens our perspective and appreciation. On this midwinter night, let us summon what we've lost with chant, prayer, song, fire, faith, that the nearly forgotten will open and rise anew, and the world will turn back towards the light. Midwinter's gift is memory, to hold a place for what was and will be again. Leaves fallen off ancient vines reveal gnarled fists of twisted branches that even now push buds into the frosted night. Low in the December sky, a tempestuous gorge of darkness cradles the waxing crescent of a buttery moon. And at the end of the western road lies the black, wet flatness of sand, where the tide ebbs and is now returning in its endless whispering susurrus. And this fulcrum of the season, we raise our arms and press our fingertips against the darkness to tip it back. There are many winters in our past, and there is a time to allow our bodies to be tired and cold. But beneath it all, and slowly rising, like Lazarus, to walk the warm earth again, our blood is flowing, our muscles stretch and lengthen, and the pale green leaves encircling our hearts await their unfolding. We lean into the dawn, eager to call the light home and be young together once more. If you're interested in time being, you can, of course, get Kaz Ta-Nehisi, two-volume works of Dogen, or you can just get Moon and a Dewdrop, which is a shorter volume, which includes this fascicle of time being. We'll start off with three parts. The first, Dogen starts off with a quote, actually, from a Zen teacher that preceded him, which he often does. He says, an ancient Buddha, Yoshan, that means one of the ancient, well, teacher in the past, said, and this is a statement from Yoshan, for the time being, stand on top of the highest peak. For the time being, proceed along the bottom of the deepest ocean. The highest, the lowest. for the time being, three heads, eight arms of a fighting demon. In other words, sort of the angry mind. Right? For the time being, an 8 or 16 foot body of the Buddha. So, angry mind, the opposite, right, of a Buddha. High, low, Buddha, angry mind. For the time being, a staff or whisks, symbols of an enlightened sage. For the time being, a pillar or a lantern, a monk striving, hasn't realized, struggling with what the meaning of existence is. For the time being, the children of common families. For the time being, earth and sky. So what is he saying? So one thing he's saying is that most people don't pay attention to the word time being. They pay attention to stand on the highest mountain or proceed along the deepest ocean. The time being just kind of sets the stage for what's really important. But what Dogen here is doing is he's taking this and he's saying what's most important is this phrase, for the time being. You know, it's kind of like in the sutras, it says, once it was said, or at one time, Ananda reiterates the teachings of the Buddha, you know. And so then you go into what the sutra is. That's the most important part. But what Dogen is saying is here, he's calling us, our attention to, no, what about, let's really, what does this mean for the time being? Let's really look into this more deeply. But there's also, because I read enough Dogen, that he's saying highest and lowest. You know, he's giving you the opposites. But what he's trying to do, I think, when he's giving this to you, is he's trying to get your, starting to shift your mind where usually we think in opposites. We usually think in terms of higher and lower, you know, Buddha, not Buddha. But he's trying to shift us now to kind of integrate those two concepts into more of a non-dualistic way of thinking. That's what I think he's doing. And then he goes into it. And I think probably the first part of the fascicle, for me, kind of sums it up. He says, for the time being, here means time itself is being. And all being is time. A golden 16-foot Buddha is time because it is time. There is the radiant illumination of time. Study it as the 12 hours of the present. 12 hours in Japanese, by the way. They say 12, but they mean 24. Study it as the 12 hours of the present. Three heads, eight arms is time. Because it is time, it is not separate from the 12 hours of the present. So let's take the first sentence. He says, for the time being means time itself is being. So time is not separate from being. Usually we think there's us, and then we kind of struggle with time, right? We have enough time, we don't have enough time. Time is a commodity. He's trying to get this to change, that we, in fact, we are time. The world is time. For the time being, here means time itself is being, and all being is time. A golden 16-foot Buddha is time. Buddha is time. Buddha is time. Because it is time, there is the radiant illumination of time. So, you know, when we first started studying, when people first started studying Buddha, there was this teacher named Buddha, Shakyamuni, and he disseminated these teachings, which were extremely helpful. But the more people, and we call that the Nirmanakaya Buddha. That's the name we give for that historical Buddha, the Nirmanakaya Buddha. But as people begin to study the idea of Buddha and what Buddha's teachings were, and where that led you, where meditation led you, where the small mind receded and the bigger mind was given a greater possibility, they begin to see Buddha in a different way, much more expansive way. And the name that they gave to that Buddha was the Dharmakaya Buddha. The Dharmakaya Buddha transcends any limitation in terms of body or time. And so that's when we were studying the Lotus Sutra, these later sutras that came on, the Avatamsaka Sutra, the Lotus Sutra, the Lankavatara Sutras. What these sutras are trying to do is expand this idea of some historical Buddha that's frozen in time. That in fact, the Buddha is with us at all times, at all places, in the future, in the past, and particularly right now, in the present. So, one of the things that, when we were studying the Lotus Sutra, and one of the things that he's taking this phrase from, is the idea that where you each are sitting right now, at some point there was a Buddha that was there before you, disseminating the Dharma. And in fact, you could think of a little, there's a visualization where a little Buddha is actually on top of every atom disseminating the Dharma. So you could visualize that everything is disseminating the Dharma. It's like Steve's question, he's not here today, but last week his question was, are rocks sentient? Are they like sentient beings? Can they expound the Dharma? So according to this, yes, rocks, trees, not just you, but everything expounds the Dharma. So I think about it, you know. I've done pilgrimages throughout India, and I've gone to Sikkim, and I've visited various holy places. You go to a holy place to be inspired by that particular place because of what happened there. The Buddha disseminated a particular sutra. But what this teaching is trying to tell you is that every moment, that everything is disseminating the Dharma. Everything is an 18-foot high Buddha disseminating. And you've experienced that, right? When you go into a grove of redwood trees and your mind is still, you can feel that the redwood trees are disseminating the Dharma of oneness. You actually have all experienced that at some point. Maybe you'll experience today when you walk out and you see the leaves in the clear blue sky. So it has something to do with how you begin to view time, you know, and space. One person said to me once, how do you stop being in conflict with time? We're always struggling with time. We don't have enough time. It causes so much stress. How can we become into a different relationship where it isn't an adversarial process with us? And the advice that was given, in which our practice deeply encourages us to do, is the way you work with time is you slow down. You can expand time by slowing down. And in some ways, that's why you come here. Your life is charged by the momentum of our society and culture. And for, I go to movies these days, and I watch the previews. I'm always struck at how fast and how intense and how everything is amped up more. I think, what is it going to be like in 20 years? It's so intense now, I can hardly contain it, you know? Went to see a movie the other day and said, these previews are approved for this particular group of people, which was like, kids. I thought, oh my God, you know, what are we doing? I think, well, maybe what's going to happen, people are going to just amp out and then everyone's going to go back. But so when we walk in meditation, you know, people laugh when I teach this at jail. You know, they think this is really funny, that we walk this slow, you know. But somehow your body gets it. Your body gets that by kind of forcing yourself to walk this slow, you're slowing your mind down. You're slowing yourself down. You're becoming into a different relationship with time. And when you sit, that's what's happening. You're not moving so much. You're just practicing being present. And your mind is integrating on a deeper level the whole idea of space and time. So I've been spending time with my Dharma brother, you know, who's dying. I don't know, a couple more weeks, but he's having a hard time moving. And so when you're with people that are dying and they're dying well, they slow you down because they're moving so slowly, you know, and every moment becomes more precious. So when Brother David, the Benedictine monk, who I know, says to me, I asked him, what's the definition of a monk or a spiritual person? And he says, it's living with death on your shoulder. So he means that a little bit. Don't take time for granted. You know, deeply explore the nature of time. Live this moment as it includes, you know, both your past and your future. So the more awake you are, you know, the more present you are, the Buddha, the 18-foot Buddha of this world, presents itself to you. So this is what Dogen is saying in this first sentence. He says, for the time being, here means time itself is being, and all being is time. A golden 16-foot Buddha is time because it is time. Because it is time, there is a radiant illumination of time. So there is a radiant illumination of time, and that's what our practice is trying to get us to experience, the radiant illumination of time. A teacher once said to me, if you hurry, you can think hurry as being aggression. And you experience that, don't you? When you hurry, you're driving too fast or you're going someplace. You always have a good reason, but there's something a little aggressive about it. And it's, you begin to see your patience ebbing. That's why in the paramitas, patience is such an important paramita. To cultivate patience, you have to come into a relationship with time. Let's go on to the second part. So he says, study time. He said, begin to study the time. Study time as if it was the Buddha. Because it is time. It is not separate. Buddha is not separate from time. So then he goes into the second section, which is very helpful to me when I read several commentaries on it. And they basically say, you know, I really don't understand this. But let me read it and just see, if a few things stick out. This is probably the most difficult part in this fascicle. So it says, even though you do not measure the hours of the day as long or short, far or near, you still call it the 12 hours. Because the signs of time coming and going are obvious, people do not doubt it. Although they do not doubt it, they do not understand it. That's not so hard to understand, but or when sentient beings doubt what they do not understand, their doubt is not firmly fixed. Because of that, their past doubts do not necessarily coincide with the present doubt. Yet doubt itself is nothing but time. So during our retreat at St. Dorothy's, I was lecturing on the Koan Mu, you know, which means our great friend Jajo. Somebody asked Jajo, does a dog have Buddha nature? And Jajo said, he said, yes, in one poem. And then another monk came up and he said, no. So what that koan is about questioning or doubting or holding a question. What is it? What could it be? And I also presented that there is a practice in Korean Zen where monks repeat this mantra. And the mantra is, what is this? And they just keep repeating it. What is this? What is? So as you're thinking, you go, what is this? What is this? And the spirit of the inquiry isn't so much, it isn't so much like trying to figure it out. That's too logical. It's like, what is this? You know? Do you see the difference? You know, one is like, what is this? What is this? The other one is like, what is this? Kind of a wonderment. So I think what Dogen is saying in this particular passage is, what is this? What is time? No. What is it? And he's saying in the first part, I think, that we don't actually question time. You know, even though you do not measure the hours of the day as long or short, far or near, you still call it. Because the sign, you call it the 12 hours or the 24 hours. Because the signs of time coming and going are obvious, people do not doubt it. So you don't doubt time. You don't question time. You don't say, what is this? You know, we just think, oh, it's just time. It's just this thing out here. And, you know, he says, and although they do not doubt it, they do not understand it. We don't really deeply understand it because we don't question it. We don't look deeply into it. But he's also saying something here maybe that is a little more difficult to understand is have you ever had an experience when you think about the past and you're not sure if something happened or not happened? Yeah. You know, my wife has this experience all the time. We'll come back from a vacation and it's so intense. You know, you go through this experience, it's so intense when you're there. You're going through it. All these experiences. But then you come back and you're just here and you're sitting at home having dinner and you think, did that really happen? Did I really go through all that experience? You know? Or do you have an experience of where you look way in the back and you can't remember, did you actually do it or not do it? Was it a dream? You heard yourself saying, was it a dream? And so in the Buddha Sutras, again and again and again, you see this phrase, life is like a dream. It's like a flash of lightning. It's like a bubble. It's something extremely ephemeral about it. And so I think Dogen is saying something in here about that, about doubting that you don't even know, you know, you think, you look at a picture of yourself and you see you're different than you are in the picture of yourself now. But he's saying you should really question that. You shouldn't just necessarily take that for sure. Because can you really prove it? Can you really prove that happened? Or as the Tibetans say, they say, is your dream life really any different than your, could this be a dream life? You know, could your dreams be as real as what you're experiencing right now? Isn't there something about this reality? So he's trying to get you to play with how concrete things are. You know, we think things are, we think we're solid and we're concrete. But that's actually not the case. We aren't as solid and concrete as we think we are. And that's really what Buddha's teaching is trying to get us to see. Just going back to the very beginning teachings where you sit and you begin to see, oh, that's a thought, that's a feeling, that's a perception, and they're just coming and they're going. Buddha was trying through his meditation to break down the sense of how solid we think we are. So I think that's what Dogen's doing here. He's trying to get us to see and question deeply what the nature of time really is. So, one thing about this I think is interesting commentary is that cause tends to, Ta-Nehisi is a friend of mine who translates this. He translates it very literally, so he doesn't interpret it. He says if this is what the Japanese character is, he'll put it down. So it's very hard for us to kind of understand it in our cultural context. He doesn't want to interpret it. He doesn't interpret in his translations. And there's something to be said for that, because like the Dhammapada, which is one of the earliest sutras, the people that translated that were, you know, Anglican missionaries. So they took it and translated it through kind of the vision of Christianity. And so some of the newer translations, like Gil Fronsdale has done a new translation of the Dhammapada, which is much more just literally what it is, and it's much more poetic and a whole different way of coming out. So cause is trying to do this with us. He's trying to say, if you keep working with this, it may be harder to understand because I'm not interpreting it to you, but maybe if you work with it, a deeper meaning will really come out. Let's go to the third and last section we'll do today. Well, I'll just read it to you. This is a little easier. The way the self arrays itself is the form of the entire world. The way the self arrays itself, presents itself, is the form of the entire world. See each thing in this entire world as a moment of time. Things do not hinder one another, just as moments do not hinder one another. The way-seeking mind arises in this moment. A way-seeking mind arises in the mind. It is the same with practice and the same with attaining the way. Thus, the self, setting itself out in array, sees itself. This is the understanding that self is time. So, how do we usually see ourselves? Again, we usually see ourselves as disconnected, as not connected. Right? And what Dogen is trying to say here is that if we could see ourselves more as a continuum of connectability, that if we could see ourselves as the Heart Sutra is encouraging us to see. So when the Heart Sutra says, you know, no death and no extinction of it, just that phrase itself is what he's saying here. There, of course there's death, right? But there is no death and no extinction of it. We exist far beyond how we formulated into this configuration of atoms and molecules and minerals. We existed far beyond before. And we'll exist far beyond when we die. And the more that we see this, the more we see how we really array ourselves, then we begin to see ourselves in a much bigger context. And things do not hinder one another. So what he's saying here is that we actually live in a world where we think things do hinder each other, right? I went down to Marin County at the College of Marin to see Box B Minor Mass. And we wanted to get there early because the reserved seats, and people were going to hinder me by taking the seats. You know, they were going to get there and get their seats So we got the best seat because, you know, that kind of mind, you know, we better get there first. Because we better get the money. We better get the food first. That's normally how we operate, is we are really operating in this world with there's only so much. And what Dogen is trying to get here is to see, can we open up to a much more expansive vision of what's possible? Can we open up to a heart that is so much more generous? And you can relax, like time. Time really just flows. It's like the way. It's like the path. Can we relax into a feeling of this, of time being? So that's good for today. And we only have 5 more pages to go. So I don't know if we'll do all of it, because really, in some ways, I presented the main kind of themes.